This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
MGO Blog Roundtable crew is with us from MGO Blog, Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, and Craig Ross. He's like author, MGO Blog, WTKA, wears a lot of hats. Fellas, how are you?
All right, I don't know what to talk about anymore.
Well, can I start with an email I got this week? I got an email that said, I finally listened to your show, and I can't figure out what the big deal is. All you guys do is sit around and talk about sports.
And that's not true. You talk about like the czar.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about more than that. Last week we talked about Marshall McLuhan, and we talked about the Russian Revolution. We've talked about all kinds of, you know, things. But, you know, it is mostly sports talk radio. I mean, I think
you go to a car dealership and say, all you guys do is sell cars.
Sell cars, like, right.
Kind of the point, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't a grocery store. It's you know, we don't have a barista here. But yeah, anyway. So
if you have a sports talk radio group that you want to talk about the Russian Revolution, I think we'd be up there among the people capable of this conversation, right?
That's actually could be true. I mean, we may be one of the few groups who know who Bakunin is.
Oh. Are we looking on this as an asset?
Well, no,
because it kind of sounds like you guys are.
If football continues in the direction they're going, it might be an asset.
Let's talk about the Russian Revolution and then come back next week and tell us about the emails you got about that. Right? I guarantee there'll be more of them.
All right.
So, okay. Hey, but guys, look, a little bit of news on the basketball front since we were last on. One, Mike Smith has declared for the NBA draft. You know, he said he's betting on himself. I think it's likely. I think he could play professionally. I think it's more likely going to be the case that it occurs overseas. But here's the interesting development, that there seems to be growing optimism about Eli Brooks returning. Not saying that's definitive, but confidence seems to be on the rise. That, yes, looking like this could happen. And then Shondi Brown. And I admit, you know, I was of the mind that this was basically a foregone conclusion that he was out. And I've been told that it's not a foregone conclusion that Shondi Brown is gone. Not saying that he'll definitely come back, but he's considering it. I'm curious what you guys think of the outlook for Michigan if they were to get both of those guys back, Eli Brooks and Shondi Brown.
I think I said on our podcast that they'd get another one seed. Now that's like a section of our podcast that's like specifically for spicy takes. So, but yeah, if you look at what the rest of the conference has coming in and what they have leaving, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that are looking at a big move up. Like, you know, if Kofi goes, Illinois is going to be in a bunch of trouble. They took a center transfer. Now, Michigan State gets an infusion of talent, but they were, you know, a 500 team in the league this year or worse. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. Iowa loses Garza. So, like, if Michigan can plug and play a couple of guys and then get back, you know, three guys from their core last year instead of just the one, then, yeah, I think you're looking at another team, another year where they should be at the top of the league. Maybe not win it, but, like, contend for it.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Yeah, I mean, Eli returning does a lot for like settling the part of the roster that we're more concerned about, because the front court's going to be awesome, right? You're adding Jabate to you know, to the best freshman in the league or in the country, and so you're, you know, we're worried about guard depth, And Eli just, I mean, settles that all down. He could play point. He could play his natural shooting guard position. He could come off the bench if, like, Frankie Collins blows up or something, right? Like, everything is on the table. And then Sean D answers the other part of that question, because you're basically forced to play one of these young guys unless you get two of these old guys back. So, I mean, there's definitely a role for them. I think if either one of them return, that pretty much means they don't have to go to the portal now, right?
Well, yeah. That was my question for Sam, I guess. It feels like you heard Sam had a wonderful interview with Phil Martelli. I think Tim McCormick and Sam did this just tremendous interview with Martelli. And he seemed to be saying, quote, the phone was ringing off the hook. Right. And they almost didn't have time to practice because he was, you know, on the phone all the time. On the other hand, the transfer portal's news seems pretty inert. It feels kind of silent. And so I'm guessing maybe that means both Eli and Sean D will be back. And I guess that's a question for Sam. The second part of it is, assuming they're uncomfortable with their point situation, who might it be? And I have a guess it's the kid from Toledo, who does seem very interested in Michigan, was the MAC player of the year last year. I don't know if those are good guesses or bad.
I think that you are spot on. And maybe it was you, Seth, who talked about guard being the primary focus. There's a lot of questions about Micah Peavy. And Micah Peavy was very interested in Michigan the first time around. There was some talk when he hit the portal that he was going to have interest in, or that he did have interest in Michigan again. And as I checked into, you know, sort of portal activity and portal interest, just didn't see much reciprocity on Michigan's part. And the reason for that is they feel like they have the wings. I mean, they have probably a glut of wings, especially if, and that was the thing that sort of made me say, okay, man, they really think that there's a good chance that Sean D. Brown comes back. If you're like, we really don't have to explore this Micah Peavy thing that much. That's number one. Number two, when you talk about some of the guard pursuits, you know, there was a name that came up, and I'm curious what you guys think of it. And I think that this may be a case where even if they get both of those guys back, I don't think that Michigan will close the door to a portal entrant that they think could help them in the backcourt. I think that their approach, you know, the quiet that you hear is not from lack of interest. I just think they feel like they don't have to rush. I think you mentioned Martelli saying phone is ringing off the hook. I get the sense that they feel like they could be really choosy, like they're the ones being chased as opposed to being the chasers, and that there are going to be more guys, that some guys have entered the portal already, that there are going to be some further portal developments here moving forward, and it is really affected their pace. A name that I think is intriguing, though, and tell me what you guys would think of this one, Jacob Young. What do you guys think of Jacob Young?
That was good, Brian.
I respect how far he came last year. I don't think I would be inclined to take him if I was Michigan.
And why is that?
He gambles on defense, so his steals are one of the most impressive statistical things he does, but it actually, Rutgers is worse when he's on the floor in terms of two-point defense. He's not much of a shooter. He's super quick in the open court, and that's something that helps, but Michigan isn't a team that really is going to push a lot, and if that's like the main thing he's bringing to your team, then Frankie Collins can do all of that and also be Frankie Collins. So to me, I would rather those minutes go to Frankie because they're kind of in the same ballpark as players, but Collins has a lot more upside.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, I like Young, and he's a nice basketball player, and on some teams he might be a good pick, but not for this team coming next year. And I don't see him as having much in the way of point abilities, and I think we're going to be fine, assuming Eli is here. I think we're going to be fine at the two. Plus, I watched a lot of tape this last couple days of Kobe Bufkin. And I'm more and more thinking he's pretty close to being able, ready to play right now. I know people say, oh, he's too skinny. He's going to need a year in the weight room. No, he's skinny the way Juwan was skinny, and Juwan was very skinny. And he's skinny the way that Jalen Rose was skinny, who was also, you know, painfully skinny. I mean, this guy is skinny, but he is strong and wiry. And I watched him playing against in a game. It was a pickup game in Chicago with Mike Smith and a couple of NBA guys. And it was, Bufkin had no problem in terms of strength of holding his own in this game. And so I think he may be pretty close to being ready to go. I know he'll be a freshman. He'll have things he needs to work through, but I think he may need some playing time. And certainly Frankie needs playing time, because that guy is a dynamo. He is a dynamic player. He has one, maybe two problems. One, we don't know how good he'll play defense, how long that's going to take. And two, can he shoot the ball well enough? But everything else in his game is amazing. And fans are going to love Frankie Collins.
So, yeah, interesting thing about Jacob Young is, you know, offensively, field goal percentage, 3-point shooting percentage, those numbers were up. And he averaged 3.5 assists per game on a team with Shaq shooting threes. I mean, they didn't have a 3-point shooter on that team at all. You drop him into a roster like this, where, you know, you're talking about better offensive talent around him. There is a, you have to assess whether or not you think he can conform. You talk about the gambles that he takes defensively. Brian, can you rein that in? Would it be easier to rein that in versus a guy who comes in who's used to taking 15 shots a game? I would think that would be something that you could work with. If you thought the guy could buy into, you're going to be part of a two-headed monster. Frankie Collins is going to get minutes here. Do you want to be a part of do you want to be a part of a team that is going to go potentially play for a championship and get developed along the way, or are you looking just for another opportunity to get the same minutes? You're like, why are you leaving Rutgers? I mean you made the tournament. You're a guy there. Why leave if it's just about being the guy? It makes me think there's something else the dude is looking for.
Well, I think it depends on where Shaundy's playing, right? Mm-hmm. So if Caleb Houston is a 25 to 30 minute per guy at the three, because Johns and Giabate are taking all the minutes at the four, then I don't think you have room for Jacob Young. I don't know if you have room for anybody from the portal, because you're going to have 30 minutes of Eli, you're going to have 20, 25 minutes of Shaundy, and then you got to get Bufkin, Jackson, Frankie, they got to get some minutes, right? Just for the future of your program. So maybe there's 30 minutes there to split between those guys. And okay, you could bring in a guy from the portal and give him 20, 25 minutes if you wanted to. But how much does that help in the short term if we're talking about a Jacob Young level guy versus a Frankie or a Zeb? And how much does that hurt your ability to go next year and have Frankie be a sophomore who got a ton of playing time and is ready to, like, you know, run the team?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, you know, and it really boils down to how confident they feel in their point guard contingent. Like, you know, they felt that you had Mike Smith and you could put Eli there and Eli could spell you, but they didn't feel real comfortable, you know, going to the bench for the point guard, for point guard relief.
Yeah, and think
will they feel any more confident in that next year?
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. That's the point. It's the point guard spot, not the shooting guard spot, really. Like, they're fine at shooting guard, I think, with a lot of options. It's who can generate the offense, because Eli just is not that kind of playmaker. And I don't know if he's going to be next year, because he's pretty much tapped out of what he's going to be. What he is really good, but I think that they are probably looking for someone who's going to be that playmaker. And I know if they're still looking in the portal at this point, especially with Shaundy coming back, like, they've got to be.
It's not determined.
We're not saying that.
We're not saying that he's coming back. So
yeah, I'm just saying, like, the question is, there is Zeb Jackson going to come through? And that kind of makes me wonder if they're thinking that's not going to happen now, because he was the guy that they thought, you know, was, other than Frankie Collins, was going to be able to kind of be a creator there.
It's going to be interesting. What do you guys think of that? I just get the feeling this is just, again, this is not anything that has been said definitively. It's just eye test, just watching him this year, it just feels like he's talking about Zeb, feels like he might still be a year away. Now, that's an outside assessment. I don't can't say for sure what they're thinking inside, but it is noteworthy to me that they are in the portal looking at that, at least looking at point guard help. When you do have Zeb here, sort of set, it lends to my opinion that he might still be not quite ready as far as, you know, point guard minutes are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's accurate. Like, you can put him at the two some. He's 6'5". He's an athlete, so you can see him getting to be a good defender. And then maybe just, like, if he can work on a shot, do that a little bit. But in terms of running the point, but, you know, we're talking about ready this year for 20 minutes? No. Ready this year for 8 minutes? You could see that. So the thing about Eli at the point is that Michigan had about 250 possessions against real teams where he was on the floor and Mike Smith wasn't. And Michigan's offense actually improved in those situations. Their turnover rate went down. Their two-point shooting went up. Their three-point shooting was even, and that's what you like to see because that's a lot of luck. So, you know, it looks like if you have Brooks at the point, you know, this is a, you know, about a 4-game sample, so it's not a ton, but there's at least some indicators here that suggest that he's going to be able to handle that, especially when you're on a team with Hunter Dickinson and Brandon Johns, guys who are going to be running high low stuff, guys who are going to be posting up and generating shots off that. Like, this isn't going to be a team that's going to need a sophomore Trey Burke or a senior Xavier Simpson, right? This is not a team that's going to need their point guard to have like a top 50 assist rate. You know, if Brooks can be at 20 and he can make some plays and lock everything down and get people into the sets, like, that's probably going to be enough.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. Eli also is going to be a great defender at the point, with, you know, so he's hardly a liability, you know, when he's out there. My, you know, I would say Jacob Young might be interesting if you have neither Eli or Shondi. Yeah. You know, if neither one of those come back, I could see taking Jacob Young. But if neither one of those come back, I'm more interested in probably a true point guard. Because if you don't have Eli, now you're going to say, okay, Frankie and Zeb are going to run the team. Well, I don't know. Maybe. You know, and so I would be, at that point, I'd be more interested in bringing in someone like the point guard at Toledo, who I know is in the portal and is interested in Michigan. I'm blocking out his name. Marion Jackson, something like that.
Yeah, that's and, what it is.
Yeah, okay. And so, or someone who can play the point, someone who's experienced to play, that can play the point. Because we've seen in the Big Ten and all over the country, really, teams that don't have good point guard play falter. You saw it with Michigan State this year where they could, I mean, really their big issue was they were a team without an engine. And you saw some of that with some other teams. And so you really have to have good point guard play and someone who's reasonably experienced at the position. So if Eli's back, great. I think you could, between Eli, Shondi and Zeb, you can probably be okay there. But if he's not, I think where you need to look is not Jacob Young, who is a nice basketball player, but someone who can run the point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out again. Very, very deliberate, very patient in how they are, very patient approach to the portal and how they go about, you know, sort of, you know, pursuing help. I think it has to do with getting your guys settled first. And I want to say again, not a guarantee that Eli and Shondi are coming back, but they're talking like it's a legit possibility. It makes sense. It makes sense for both. Fifth year for, you know, as you're talking about, Eli's right there in his progression. And even though Shondi would be 23 years old in the 2022 NBA draft, He could play himself into being a first round pick. I mean, you talk about a guy whose percentages went up, his attempts went down, minutes went down, but percentages went up. And on next year's squad, I would say you get Eli Brooks and Shondi Brown back. That's a better team. It's a more versatile, more explosive team than the one that they had this year, I think. I don't know what.
Whoa.
I do. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm hyped up about this recruiting class, but like deleting Franz and livers off the.
You're adding Frankie Collins explosion. You're adding Musa Diabate explosion. You're coming off the bench with Isaiah Barnes explosion. I think that there is an athleticism on that roster that isn't present on this Patriots roster. I mean, you could argue that they're a better defensive team because of the experienced defenders they have. You got Franz on this squad. But man, I feel like you got more options, more explosive options on this team. That's if you get Shondi Brown back.
Without Shondi, without Eli, the problem is you're a pretty young team. And, you know, as good as these guys look, in high school, it's still high school. And you take a kid like the kid who's transferring, he's in the portal from Illinois, Adam Miller, is that his name?
Yeah.
I looked at him in high school, I go, man, this guy's phenomenal. I mean, he's phenomenal. Well, he wasn't phenomenal this year at Illinois. He was a good player.
Make sure be clear that the premise is that you, for me anyway, that you have Eli and Shondi on this team. You throw what I said out the window if you don't have those two.
Yeah, and I mean, but this is an interesting class. I mean, everyone assumes that Giabite is going to play the four. Well, I don't know. Is he going to get in Hunter's way? Is that going to look like Georgie and Coburn to some extent? I mean, those two guys couldn't be on the court at the same time. Is that going to look?
Who's Georgie checking when he's a four? That's not a problem for Giabate, right?
Like, yeah, that's true. I mean, and that's the homily you are who you can check, and that's a good homily, and so yeah, that may be right, but he isn't. I mean, he has a little bit of a mid-range game, and sometimes I say, okay, he's Loy Vaught, but maybe a more athletic Loy Vaught. But on the other hand, he's still basically a center. And when I watch him, I see him as more of a center than as a guy who's a sort of four, but maybe that'll turn out to be wrong. So I'm not sure about that. And
I mean, I think it's going to be a step back offensively, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have that kind of Jaren Jackson playing the four at Michigan State effect, where you have the best help defender in America terrorizing people.
That's true. I mean,
I think you're going to have, it'll be a different feel for that lineup, but I think it'll be close enough to playing him at the five that I think he's going to be able to get 10 or 15 minutes at the four next year and probably split his minutes about evenly. And then, you do have Hunter Dickinson. So Hunter Dickinson has an elbow jumper. He's displayed a really good passing range. So, yeah, okay, maybe Musa Diabate is technically the four in that lineup. But if you're running high low, you can put Hunter Dickinson high and you can put Musa Diabate low, and he's going to be – like if he's in the dunker spot, that's a good spot for him to be in. So
I agree.
I think it's workable. It's not going to be something that you're going to want to have in your starting lineup, but I think it's something you can get mileage out of for 10 to 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about Isaiah Barnes over the course of this period. And I watched some of him this week, and every time I watch him, my fear is he's going to hit his head on the rim. I mean, have you ever noticed that?
Man, I'm telling you, I've talked to more than one, source in there who think that when all is said and done, Isaiah Barnes could be the best guy from this class. I know he's not the highest rated right now.
Yeah.
But upside, they think this dude's upside is through the roof.
Well, his shooting numbers are also very good. So, if he's able to be a super bouncy guy who's also a 40% three-point shooter, like you get like a GR3, except he can shoot really well kind of guy. Yeah, I'll take that. I mean, his highlight reels are diverse, which is always important. They're not just the one thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And he does pop off the floor. Like he can get up.
He can really get up. And the thing that I was surprised was he might be able to play the two some. I mean, he is 6'7", but he does handle the ball okay. And that is a huge lineup. Yeah, I know. And so he does give you a certain level of flexibility that's unusual. I watched some of his tape the last few days, and I was just amazed by how athletic Barnes is. And I'm not sure why he's rated where he's rated. I mean, it's not like he's low, but it looks to me like a top 50 athlete guy. And I watched him play. I think the game was against Simeon, so he must have been playing with Oak Park. So
yeah, this must have been as a junior because he's at Simeon now.
Yeah, so he was playing against Simeon. So, and man, I mean, he scored 27 points in the game, and they had, and it was like nothing. It was like there, it was just easy for him. And so I think, yeah, there's a lot in this class, and there's a lot in this class that might just be surprising, even surprising to all of us who are paying attention to Michigan basketball.
Yeah, we got a message from our friend Eric Tolbert.
Mm-hmm.
Says Isaiah Barnes is so underrated. He's a real sleeper. He's going to be a pro. And E knows what he's talking about because he's the guy who cost Michigan. I'm just throwing it out there. And Ira, you know, I'm one to, you know, really lean on sources to really talk about how important it is to, you know, for basketball people or football people who might have some knowledge of who players are to, if you do that, or you have that knowledge, to send that knowledge in. Maybe let John Beilein know you have a connection to John Morant and you think John Morant is going to be a pro. You should tell John Beilein that information. Yeah, Eric Tolbert, he had that connection to John Morant. He knew John Morant as a high schooler and said he knew he was going to be a pro. Didn't tell John Beilein. John Morant goes to a mid-major and becomes a lottery pick.
He will never live this down. Eric will never live this down.
If Eric Tolbert had just told John Beilein, I got to know this guy, John Morant. You should get on him. Rest would be history. John Morant would have been a Wolverine. It's his fault. Just throwing it out there. Get to a break. Be back on the other side with more MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. That's a true story, by the way.
Is that a true story?
He dated his aunt or something like that at one point. Yeah.
Do we know that his relationship with John Morant was actually an asset then?
He could at least let John Beilein know about the guy. Hey man, I know this kid. He's this bouncy athletic kid. He's a sleeper. No one's on him, but go check him out. Like just that.
Well, I mean, that's how Beilein ended up getting Eli, right? This is the old coach that knew his dad in the Philadelphia area said, no one is recruiting this kid. I think he's a really good player. And
that was Rockman, I thought.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Rockman. You're right. It was Rockman. Yeah, it was Rockman. Good point.
That one happened really late, too. That was like the very end of the cycle.
I'm trying not to get too hyped about Barnes just because, like, yeah, you do look at him and you're like, this guy looks pretty good. And then
yeah,
if like he's a hit and you got the rest of this class, it's like, shish.
Yeah, I know. So,
hey man, I'm just calling out facts. A man had a connection to the number two pick in the NBA draft.
But he has learned his lesson, Sam. He has started to pass some names along to you from down there in South Carolina.
You know, I love you, E. I love you. I just, you know, it's out of love that I called out that.
We also love E because we're both taller than Eric. So we love Eric for that, too.
Wow. That's actually not true.
I don't know.
I think Eric is taller than us.
I don't know if he's taller than me. We're pretty eye to eye. Sad thing is his son, I think, has already shot past all of us. And Ethan's like 14 or something.
This is literally not a very high bar to clear.
I've seen this story before.
That's true. It's true. High bar on this show, very, very low.
I have heard this story. Michigan State,
oh, yeah.
They reported him for something to do with Minnesota.
Reported who? Weber.
Yeah. No, Weber was reported by Michigan State came in and filed some complaint with the NCAA for something that happened with Weber on a Minnesota recruiting trip.
Yep, exactly.
And so that pissed Weber off so much. The story is that he was going to go to Michigan State until that happened. He got so pissed off that he decided, hey, I'm going to go to Michigan. Now, I don't know how true that story is, but I've heard it many times. So
back on radio in about 45 seconds, guys.
Yeah, so want to get some football in, here and some hockey too to get your you guys' take on who's coming back.
Coming back on radio in 5, 4, 3.
We are the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com with the MGO Blog Roundtable. We have Brian Cook, we have Seth Fisher, we have Craig Ross. We spent the first segment talking about who could be returning for Michigan basketball. Please don't take that conversation as a definitive sign that Eli Brooks or Shondi Brown, that either of them are coming back. That's just the possibility. It is a distinct possibility is what I wanted to raise your attention to. But what about on the hockey side, guys? Obviously disappointing end to the season when you talk about being removed from the tournament due to COVID. Now the question turns to next year and how much of that talented base could be back. John Morosi, we had him on yesterday. He seemed to think there's a good chance that, Michigan has Owen Power, Maddie Beniers, and Kent Johnson back. Wow, really? I couldn't believe it. This is a dude who follows Michigan hockey with the NHL Network. He says it's going to be interesting to see how high they go, but he felt like there's a decent chance of that happening. And I'm curious, are you guys hearing anything at all about who might be returning on the hockey side of things?
Well, I usually don't have anything that would be insider information, but I do have some noise from well-placed people who think that most all of the freshmen will be back, that Cam York certainly is leaving, but that, if not all, most all of that class will be returning. They are young. They're not older guys, so you've got
Beniers, Kent
kids
Johnson.
Who were 17, 18 year olds, and so there's a good chance that a good chunk, if not all of them, will be back next year, which is a big deal. Now I don't know if you guys followed what's going on in the national championships.
With UMD stuff?
Yeah, UMD won in 5 overtimes. I thought I heard today. Could that be right? I didn't watch it.
5 overtime game. Mm-hmm. What happened to Brian, by the way?
As soon as we started talking Michigan hockey summer, he just bailed. That was.
Oh, there he is.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah, they say Michigan hockey summer, and all of a sudden, Brian disappears.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great news. And, usually Michigan will get a year out of someone who gets drafted very high. Like if you're a top half of the first round pick, usually you will get a freshman year at Michigan. And because these guys are sort of younger and they're draft eligible now, you would expect that you would get one more year out of them. Now, the issue is that these guys are so highly touted that one of them might be the first pick in the draft. And historically, that guy always gets signed. It might be a little bit different because Owen Power is young and he's a defenseman and you might leave him for one more year. But yeah, I feel like there's a couple of, like, Kent Johnson is clearly a guy who needs another year to bulk up and be able to start walking off the wall. And then Bordalo and Brisson are both guys who are tracking towards the NHL, but you're going to want, NHL teams are going to want them to have like a true breakout season, which might be next year. It might be a junior year. Like, Cooper Marody was a third round pick and had a bust out season and got signed. And now he's kind of like the top scorer in the AHL. So those are guys who usually you get 2 or 3 years out of. And I think you'll probably see that happen. Now, it's one of those things where you believe it when you see it, because they're going to get drafted and someone's going to think that college hockey is in a great route and they're going to want them to move to possibly directly to the AHL, whatever. So I'm not expecting everybody back, but as long as they don't take too many hits, like they have another class coming in of guys who are highly touted. So they have another couple of guys coming in that aren't on campus yet who could be first round picks. They have a guy who was a third round defenseman last year. They have Luke Hughes, who is another candidate to go in the top 5. So they are going to be as or more talented next year unless they get absolutely decimated. And then, this is a team that their top 6 scorers were 5 freshmen and a sophomore. And you look at Wisconsin, you look at Minnesota, they had much more experience than Michigan, and they have equal talent levels. And that's kind of why it felt like, even though Michigan was basically 500 against those two teams last year, that it felt like those teams were better than Michigan, and Michigan was a little bit fortunate to get that record. Next year, all bets are off.
So let's say, I mean, talk about Owen Power maybe being the number one pick in the draft and coming back. Let's say you get him back, and you get Beniers back, and you get Johnson back. You just mentioned Luke Hughes, who, I mean, what did you say, top five?
That's what people are saying, yeah. It's possible. Maybe he's top 10. He's definitely top 10.
So give me some perspective here, Brian. I mean, you said more talented than last year. It sounds like, to me, one of the most talented teams ever at Michigan. Yeah.
I mean, you could definitely say that. You'd be wanting to go back to the Brendan Morrison days for a comparison. Mm-hmm. And the difference back then is that, you know, Brendan Morrison, I think he spent 4 years at Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
I think that's right.
That doesn't happen anymore. So that team would be better because their top guys who ended up in the NHL were all 3 and 4 year college players. That's not going to happen with this group. But in terms of just sheer raw, where did you get drafted talent? I think next year's Michigan hockey team would probably be the best in the history of college hockey.
In terms of just talent, though.
I mean,
I don't know how they're going to play.
You're looking at a group that's maybe going to have 4 top 5 picks, which just doesn't happen. I've never seen anything like this. So you get these guys at the Athletic putting out their draft list, and sometimes 4 of the top 5 guys are Michigan commits or recruits. It's never happened.
Add that to the history of
college hockey.
I'm not saying they're going to be the best team in the history of college hockey. What I'm saying,
I hear you. I understand the distinction.
I mean, it's them or a couple BC teams, but like, there were some North Dakota teams from back in the day.
Like, there have been some teams that have been absolutely loaded, but just in terms of where you went in the draft, yeah, I don't think there would be a comparison. Now, this draft does not have like a Patrick Kane at the top of it, right? This Owen Power would not be a number one overall pick in most years because they would find somebody who is easily plug and play in the NHL immediately. And so it's a little bit of, I guess, an off year at the very top of the draft. That's the only like caveat I could provide for that.
I gotcha. Any more Hughes brothers coming down the pipe?
No, not yet. I mean, we got to get the Wagners working again. We got to get the Hugheses working again. Like, I know it's a burden, but we will help you out with the childcare.
You gotta be kidding me, man. I mean, that's what... That'd be for 3 top 10 picks.
We need them to convert to Mormonism and just get after it.
Top 5. And so, I mean, Jack went number one overall, right?
Yeah.
Right. And so
Quinn went 7th, I believe, just after the Red Wings picked, if you guys remember that.
Mm-hmm. So right in between. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. So, all right. So wanted to make sure we got some football in, guys, as they have their, what did you call them, Ira, spring activities? You didn't call it a spring game, spring activities?
I mean, it's not a game, right? It's an activity.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, I don't know about you and what your takeaways were more broadly when it came to spring rumblings. But for me, I didn't read into it anything in the way of, you know, the getting a read for how good or how much better the offense is going to be next season. I do believe they're going to be better offensively, but everything I hear about the defense makes me think they're very much in the formative stages. And it's what you should expect for a major defensive overhaul like this, not just in scheme, but in how guys fit. I mean, there's a reason why a guy like, Apache Mohan hits the portal. I mentioned this to you guys at the, you know, when the new staff hires were made, like, what is a Viper? What are these Vipers going to be? So it was no surprise to me, for instance, that a guy who was a very promising young talent decided to hit the portal. I just think that it's hard to gauge how much better the defense is based on what they're facing this spring.
Yeah. And the question is always going to be the cornerbacks, right? Like, you can change your defense all you want, but you still need 2 cornerbacks out there on an island, and they need to be a lot better than last year. Now, you had Jamon Green kind of come along and be a guy who you can project down the road. And I just don't know who number two is. And then you need number three.
You know, actually that's the one place where I don't want to say trust, but I'm optimistic about the noise, because there has been some jibber jabber that the corners have played pretty well, and it looks to me like the safety should be fine, that Gray and Green have been pretty good, and that Turner is coming along. You know, I hear all that. What I don't hear is anything about the defensive line and linebackers, you know, being, and you also keep hearing that the running backs are great, which makes me feel like, the defense is getting shredded on the ground. That's what I fear. But I'm a little optimistic about the secondary. I just don't know, you know, if Michigan's going to be able to stop a run game. But that's just from vague noise, not any sort of reality.
I think they have high level or safeties that are going to play at a high level. Beyond that, it's total wait and see everywhere else for me. Total wait and see.
And so this is year seven, and we're talking about this like this is a first year for a new head coach.
Yeah,
you don't know who your quarterback is. You got a quarterback transfer, and you got a new defense. You don't really know what to expect. And I don't know if the fan base is going to be particularly generous towards the idea that we're rebooting. I guess we're going to find out. We'll see.
Let's inject a little bit of optimism here, because it's not total.
Okay.
I'm not total like, oh my God, I just have no clue. The offense is going to be better. I'm convinced of that. The running back noise, they say, I mean, Blake Corum has been outstanding in practice. He's, you know, I don't take that to mean that he's going to be the starter, because I know that Hassan Haskins, you know, what Hassan Haskins does shows up better on game days than it does on a spring ball practice field, right? So, but between that and you throw Donovan Edwards into the mix, you have some guys that actually have some experience under their belts, playing together off on the offensive line. Now, I think they have the pieces, and a guy who in Cade McNamara, who is comfortable in the scheme, comfortable with the team, knows the offense, move the chains. They're going to be better. Again, I'm not ready to say that based on what they've been doing in spring ball, that they're going to be as improved as it looks like they are in practice against this defense right now. Cause if you just go by what, you know, what I'm hearing about how the offense is done, this spring, then man, they're going to be some juggernauts. I'm not ready to say that yet.
I certainly believe the offensive line is going to be better, because remember how banged up they were last year? Like, they were losing guys right and left. Zinter's going to be a sophomore. They're talking about him like he's the best lineman on the team, where like last year he was a true freshman thrown in there. So you certainly can imagine the offensive line being much better, just because they're going to have the guys back. Last year they were, you know, changing up the line every single week. And that changes everything. Like, they were getting behind the sticks last year, and so they were being forced into third and long. You couldn't really show what the running backs had. And Corum showed some really good things, and he just needed some more patience, which is what the practice reports are saying. Mm-hmm. So, like, I can believe all that. Plus the receivers, like, they're a year older now. And Ronnie Bell, you know what you're getting with him. And then you just add tons of speed. So, sure, offense could be fine. Defense, you know, they're – from what I'm understanding, they're putting in some complicated things. It's basically the opposite of the defense that Madison came in with, where like he just simplified everything. Here's our front. We're just going to live with it. You know, if Jake Ryan gets matched with a slot receiver, we're going to live with it, right? It's just going to happen. It seems like they're going to match personnel and then just check everything. And that's a complicated defense to learn. And it's understandable if they are, you know, struggling to pick it up, especially at the linebacker level, because what you're really doing is pushing some of the things that Don Brown had his defensive lineman doing into the linebackers and having them make reads. So, okay, maybe that's going a little slow.
Yeah, which you would expect. What do you guys make of getting back to Martelli? But you can sort of apply it to all the sports, certainly football. He said, you know what the portal has done is it has made it so you're building a team every year. That's essentially what you do now. And so you need to approach the portal that way. Like you have a gap in the pros, you fill it in in free agency. That it felt like, and we discussed this before, Michigan has a few limiting factors in that how many credits will transfer, can a kid get in. For football, there was an added layer where, hey, how much space do you have? But it feels like that's kind of working itself out with some guys entering the portal. They have a little more flexibility than I think some of the numbers crunchers were projecting, based on guys who have entered the portal and some flexibility they have with Alan Bowman, which I talked about. So I'm curious what you guys think of the portal and how instrumental that could be in changing the outlook for Michigan next year.
Well, it sure looks like it's relevant right now at MSU, right? Because I think they have 11 guys who've come in the portal this year. And so that's the direction they seem to be going. But I don't know how much you're going to see that really at Michigan. I think you may see it with a player every now and then, a guy like Bowman at a position that's problematic. But otherwise, I guess think it's going to be pretty limited.
This is a specific question, because I was pretty open-ended. Someone asked me, do you think that the portal ultimately will be a detriment to Michigan because of those limitations that I mentioned, whereas other teams are going to be able to routinely go in and build their team on a yearly basis, like Michigan State is doing. I mean, I see another side of it, though. I don't think that my answer was, look, I look at what Juwan Howard just did. He was pretty successful going in and filling in some gaps in the portal. It may not be as easy at Michigan, but I'm not convinced yet that the portal is going to be detrimental to Michigan's standing relative to competition who has it easier.
It's both, because Michigan is a program that's not hard to recruit to, especially if you've already been at a school and you want to get a better degree and you've kind of proven yourself from a lower level. Michigan is certainly one of those few schools that can be like, hey, you want to upgrade from your Mac degree to a Michigan degree? That's a big deal. Michigan really does have to get with their academics department. I went through this thing when I was in school, and I was like, it's horrible to learn that it's still a problem. Michigan has the worst system for transferring credits I think I've ever heard of. You have to take a class that you took there and then find a class at Michigan and have it go through. I had to like go through the entire roster of Michigan classes when I was trying to take classes from where I studied abroad and turn those into Michigan credits, and I failed on most of them. And that's a huge problem for like the football program and the basketball program. And academically, Michigan can't get transfers just because they have this stupid policy. And, you know, if this makes this policy go away because the transfer portal is now, you know, basically a free agency for college football players and basketball players, fine. Michigan's need to change this for a long time.
I guess I don't see football or the portal changing changing that approach. that's just me. I don't know about what you guys are hearing along those lines. But another question I want to get in real quick, and this came from the crowd. Terry Power says, go ahead and start JJ. Maybe we can get a championship before he leaves. That is an interesting debate, because everything I've heard has Cade McNamara ahead, as you would expect. Knows the team and scheme, as I say, more consistent. Let's say that, you know, that continues to be the case in the fall. I mean, there's a line of thinking among some in the fan base to say, hey, you go with the young guy and you start nurturing, getting him game ready now with, if he shows the ability to make those wild plays and those big plays, live with the mistakes and let him grow on the job, versus going with the guy who's been more steady, who moves the chains, who knows the system and takes what's there. What you guys' take on that? Would you go young and just let him learn on the job? Or would you go with the guy who's been more steady, albeit without maybe some of the big play possibilities that JJ might provide?
Well, I guess, do I have Harbaugh's old buyout or his new buyout? If I have his new buyout, I'm trying to win every game and I'm not thinking about next year.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, what makes fans think, or me think, that they're not going to all play anyway? I mean, we can't keep a quarterback healthy for more than a game or two and have it for, Michigan.
That's
everybody, right? Not just Michigan. And so there's no reason to believe that you're only going to see, say, McNamara next year anyway. You know, it's more than depressing in some contexts, because every year of my lifetime, just about, maybe even including last year, fans came into the season feeling some optimism, some sense of hope. We're coming off a 2-4 year where they won their first game. So by my count, that means they lost 4 of the last 5, and they didn't have to play Ohio State or maybe at least one other team that would have smoked them.
We would have beaten Ohio State.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but, you know, where Michigan football is actually at right now is a complete unknown, and it's hard for I think anybody, except perhaps people who have been in practices, to really understand where they're at. It may be better than we fear, or it may be, you know, worse. I don't know.
I think it's kind of hilarious to think of Cade McNamara as a move the sticks guy, because that dude is a moxie dude who's going to take some risks. Even if he doesn't have the arm strength that J.J. McCarthy does, his game is not like, you know, okay, let's calm down and move the chains here. That's just not who Cade is. So maybe that could be who Bowman is. It's kind of hard to take somebody from a spread passing game and then, you know, put him into a Harbaugh offense and figure out what he's going to be. But, like... Like you said, it's likely we see all these guys. I don't like having a quarterback try to learn on the job, especially if you don't know if your offensive line is going to protect him well, because that's how you ruin guys. I mean, I'd much rather make things a little easy on him, give him some, give him a package or two that he can run, and you know, his future is in the future.
Real quick, because I got to give this guy equal time. Eric Tober, he messaged in, I tower over Sam and Ira Weintraub. They make me feel tall, and his son Ethan is just 13, and he is already past them, talking about Ira and I. That may be true, Eric, but I never cost Michigan a player of caliber from Tom Morant. I never cost Michigan a lottery pick like you did. So how about that? I'm just saying.
Maybe slightly tower.
All right. Well, fellas, as always, it's been real. Appreciate you joining us for another edition of the MGO Blog Roundtable. The rest of you, we will be back tomorrow. You know how we do.